Mario Bauza with El Manicero, the peanut vendor. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, April the 26th, and Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, the surviving suspect in the Boston Marathon bombings, has been moved from the hospital that he shared with the victims of his bombings. From the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center to a prison hospital facility for male inmates who require specialized or long-term medical or mental health care. The move comes a day after New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Ray Kelly, incomprehensibly, in my view, revealed that Dzhokhar and his brother Tarmalan, who was killed in a shootout with police in Watertown, had Times Square in their sights before law enforcement authorities put an end to their spree. Now, I cannot understand why that needed to be known, but unless it was a way of the mayor and the police commissioner saying, hey, we're in this too. You know, we could have been it. So they're trying to share the limelight, I suppose, with the city of Boston. Silly. It's called intelligence for a reason, isn't it? Well, I'm going to talk today about a question that routinely pops up. At least it has to me, and I know it has to many others who are immigrants. And the question is, so where are you from? It's an innocent sounding question, but it is loaded with meaning. Even sometimes the people asking the question don't understand the question that they're asking. And many, many times the people being asked the question themselves don't understand the many levels of meaning in it. But I want to give you my thoughts about that. Since immigration has surfaced as a major concern with regard to the bombing, believe it or not, the Boston Marathon bombings had generated tremendous concern in Congress, debating whether there's something to be learned here that should impact the legislation for immigrants. And they were even willing to put it on hold. Because the brothers, of course, being Chechen and Islamic, as they called them, they're Muslims, but people now say Islamic, just to let you know that, to let you know that they understand what it is. They are Islamic, you know. There's supposed to be a very deep lesson here, and the brothers are this incident, and the brothers as immigrants. One was, in fact, an immigrant. Given naturalization, and the other was seeking it. The deceased brother, Tamerlan, had been seeking citizenship. And the question is, are these people, these Muslims, now that they have raised the question, and the question is, why do they hate America? And should this country extend its benefits, its bountiful benefits, to people who harbor a hatred for America? Well, I guess, you know, it's a legitimate question in some places, but I find it to be super simplistic. But super simplistic questions are par for the course in Congress. They do not seem to understand that there's a context for everything, and they're not interested in the context. If the context should point to huge faults in their reasoning and even in their history. This question came to me in a rather crude way many years ago. And it came to me at the point of a gun. I was then the editor of a newspaper, and our production facility, the place where we put the paper together, was located in Hackensack, New Jersey. And in order to just ward off the traffic, I was living in Brooklyn, and I had to travel to Hackensack. And to just ward off the traffic at, you know, morning rush hour, I'd leave the house extra early. And usually, of course, I'd arrive very early to the plant, and there would probably be one or two people there, but I would be able to get in, which was the main thing, to just get there ahead of everybody and calmly assemble myself for the day. It happened that that day that I got there, the facility was closed. Nobody was there. And I decided, well, I'll just wait. And I reclined my seat, and I thought I'd get a couple of shut eyes before the day would really hit me in production. And there was this tap on the window. A very hard tap. It actually jolted me. And I woke up. I was jolted out of my sleep. And there was a police officer with his gun drawn and pointing at me. And I just couldn't put this whole thing together. I'm sleeping. But what's with the gun? What's with the drawn gun? And he says, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm sleeping. He says, I mean, what are you doing here? I said, well, I was too early to the plant. I'm right in front of the building, by the way. I'm smack in front of the building. Said, I arrived here a little too early, and I thought I would sleep until somebody came in. It was time to open up the plant. And then he says, where are you from? And I gave him the answer. I said, I'm from Brooklyn. I'm from Brooklyn. And the gun is drawn. I mean, it's pointed at me. This is early in the morning, okay? This is before 8 o'clock in the morning. And for some reason, when I said that, I said, I'm from Brooklyn. He put his gun away, and he went his merry way. A Hackensack police officer did that. So where are you from? Kind of, it's not a good question to ask me from a psychological point of view. It produces blowback, shall we say. I understood exactly where he was coming from, all kidding aside. And where he was coming from was a place that many people asking that question are coming from. What are you doing here? And where are you from? Instant recognition that you just don't belong here. You don't belong here. You are not. I do not perceive you as someone who should be sharing my space and breathing my share of oxygen. You ought to be someplace else. Now, imagine that was the reaction when I said, I'm from Brooklyn. I don't know what the reaction would have been if I said, well, I'm from Trinidad. Whoa, I may have been jailed or even shot for being from Trinidad that early in the morning. There was an article that appeared in the current issue of Time magazine, and it's written by a Chinese author named Eric Liu. And he talks about, of course, the notion, well, let me read you some of it. Does America still Americanize immigrants? That question is now nervously being debated in the wake of the Boston Marathon bombings. It's not just that the Tsarnaev brothers were torn between two worlds, as the cliche goes. It's that Tamerlan, the elder brother, actively rejected American life. He had no American friends. He harangued other American Muslims for celebrating Thanksgiving in July 4. He was, in short, a bad immigrant. So where are you from? And are you a good immigrant or a bad immigrant? Or why should you be tolerated as an immigrant at all? Well, on my father's side of the family, we encounter Germans, my last name is German, and Scots. My father's mother was a rare bird, very rare in the Caribbean. She was a Carib woman. You know, the people after whom the region is named. She was one of those. A full-blooded Carib woman. On my mother's side of the family, her mother, from Barbados, we find an admixture of Irish and African, which is not uncommon at all in the Caribbean. And on my mother's father's side of the family, it's almost uninterrupted African lineage. In fact, my mother and her sisters, my aunts, would tell me of their aunts not being able to understand their aunts because they spoke an African language. And in my current family, my extended family, we have all kinds of people. My godfather is Chinese. We have Chinese sisters-in-law, Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists. All kinds of folks are in my family. In fact, at a wedding of my niece, when the photographer said, okay, time for the lead family, and we all got up and He said, no, no, just the leads, the lead family. Because all these different kinds of faces were standing up and coming to take a picture. And we were all related. And it blew his mind. But in my experience, it's no big deal. That's what it looks like in my neck of the woods in Trinidad. Everybody's mixed up. There's no big deal to that. Not at all. But Trinidad, as it happens, archaeologists have determined that it was settled as early, at least the earliest that they have been able to date settlement of Trinidad, is 2100 BC. I will repeat that. 2100 BC. Showing the movement of people into Trinidad from the Orinoco Basin with adjacent Venezuela since 2100 BC. That little island, that little speck of dust in the Caribbean Sea. So clearly people have been living there. We've had immigrants there for a long time. And then in 1498, another immigrant showed up named Christopher Columbus. And he decided that everything on the land, in the land, under the land, over the land, and around the land will be claimed in the name of Spain. And thus began a systematic genocide. I referred to my grandmother, my father's mother, as a very rare person in the Caribbean. She's now deceased. But there aren't very many Caribs left in the Caribbean. Entire pools of people were just wiped out. Their customs, their languages, their traditions, all just gone. And it's not just Mr. Columbus to blame, because we've had several generations of occupation by different European powers. That little island, a little teeny tiny island. Spain wanted it, and then the French, and then the British, and then the Dutch, and then everybody who felt the need to just run around the world and taking things that didn't belong to them. Trinidad was one of the bounty. So that little island, for example, actually created the British Empire. That little island and little islands like St. Vincent and Antigua and the bigger island, the biggest island, English-speaking island, Jamaica, created and propped up the British Empire. It made entire countries absolute superpowers with labor supplied from Africa, captured labor supplied from Africa, indentured labor coming from India and China principally. But working people to death, literally, to create commodities that would be traded in the first global market. Global economy was slaves and slave trade and the byproducts thereof. So technically, this is my theory, anybody coming from any of those islands is entitled to view the world as a world citizen. Should you want to live in Spain, you should feel no problems about that. Dues have been paid. Should you want to live in Holland, you are entitled to world citizenship because the world was in your place. The world was at work in depriving everybody of their human rights, of a right to a good life. So you are a world citizen. And wherever you choose to live, you should be able to live. That is a terrifying response. How dare you see yourself as a world citizen? But hey, take a look at history. Take a look at history. The United States, of course, we had many Americans coming to the Caribbean. World War II, they were successful in blockading it, almost starved the entire Caribbean. Were it not for that wonderful little island, Dominica, that fed the Caribbean. Thank God for breadfruit. When nationals of other countries come to places like Trinidad and Antigua and Jamaica and St. Lucia and Dominica and all these other islands, they have no desire to be part of the population. They have no desire for assimilation. They have no desire at all for learning the culture and adjusting to it. They arrive and they remain largely as imperial subjects who automatically rule over you. And whatever you have and whatever you can give is theirs. The President of the United States, a former president, Bill Clinton, has installed himself as a kind of savior for Haiti. And he and Bill Gates have bought up a whole lot of land, and their vision is to create a city. Do we not know, even now, that it is not for Haitians? We know that. The mentality is, the superpower rights of the country devolve to the citizen of the country. And wherever Americans are, they're not integrated. They desire no integration whatsoever. They live by themselves. The British do it. The Dutch do it. They still maintain that mentality of colonialism and imperialism. They are entitled to extra special privileges because they're extra special people. Now, why do people leave the Caribbean? And if you look at the numbers and the statistics, they're mind-boggling. The movement of people from the Caribbean to other parts of the world. And it's quite understandable. Because the powers that seized these countries, these tiny little islands, never, ever built those things that civilized societies should have. No universities, no schools, no social support systems. Their view is these are all labor and service providing countries. These are not real people. So you don't build institutions that would give them the opportunity to be equal with the people oppressing them. So they leave when they agree to grant independence, which is a joke, but all right, we'll get to that another day. If you have to negotiate independence, it's not real independence, is it? Everybody knows how you get independence. You get it with tanks and bullets, and you get it with war. Nobody ever negotiates to see how much freedom their previous captors will allow them to have. So it's a negotiated settlement. It's more of an appeasement than independence. But Britain still has crown lands all throughout the Caribbean. France does too. The highest courts in Trinidad and Jamaica, for example, are in London. You don't have a court system that actually handles the issues that any typical society would have. So there's no evidence, really, of these entities bringing to bear, let's say by the time they decided, okay, we have done enough pillaging here, we have taken enough from these tiny little islands, the least we could do is build some schools, or build an irrigation system, or build a water treatment plant. These are the least we could do. They don't do that. So there are generations of people from the Caribbean who, if they desired to make anything of their lives, they could not find it in the Caribbean. It simply didn't exist. If you desired to further yourself in terms of education, there wasn't a university until recently, really, in the historical terms. But it meant you had to go to Britain. Or you had to go to, for the French islands, if you come from Martinique, you couldn't have a thorough education in Martinique, or Guadeloupe, or Montserrat. You had to get out. If you had an ambition to do anything remarkable in life, including to come back and lead your country, all of our leaders were educated outside of the countries that they represented at the end. They all were, much like Africa. And Africa was the seat of learning. All these philosophers and mathematicians and scientists went there to study, went there to learn. But those things were not there for the people who wanted to learn in their own land. So this is what I mean. You have a relationship that is decidedly one way. And people say, well, why do you want to come to America? Well, why not? Why not want to come to America? America had no problem, still doesn't have any problem claiming whatever it wants, wherever it wants, however it wants, it can get it. And it does. If you want just a decent life, why not come here? Why not go to Britain? Why not go to Holland, wherever your colonizer was or is? What's wrong with that? Your country was left absolutely wrecked by colonialism and imperialism. Wrecked completely. The tools that you require, the tools that are needed to build a country are not there. They're elsewhere. You have to leave. So when people ask, where are you from? That's only part of the question. The other is on a social level. And that is immediately communicating, we know you are not of us, so you must be from someplace else. Where are you from? Now, would you believe if I were to ask people, you want to know where I'm from? Here's a map of the world. Tell me where Trinidad is. They won't find it. They could barely find where Chicago is. They can barely find where Connecticut is. But that does not in any way inhibit what should be, to them, a kind of odd question to ask. You're asking people who know more about you than you know about them. I'm on my 7th passport. And I got my first passport at age 7. My profession on my passport was listed as child. I was a professional child. But that is an indication, and I just wanted to mention that. It is not a big chest-thumping idea. Oh, I had a passport from age 7. Let me translate that for you. My parents understood intuitively that they had to be prepared at any moment to move out of the country and to move their children out of the country if they desired certain things that were not available. That's the life of many immigrants. And oddly, it's the life of many Americans. Many Americans are living here and can't access a lot of the things that immigrants want to access too. They're immigrants too. I saw conditions in the Delta region that would make you scream. These are Americans, African American and Caucasian Americans, living like in the state of poverty that would break your heart. I had never seen anything like that in Trinidad, ever. I saw a family of 32, including 17 children, living in a 3-room house with no water, no heat, in Mississippi, no indoor plumbing, and literally with worms and vermin and everything all in the yard. I'd never seen anything like that, ever. They're immigrants in this country. So when we talk about the issue of immigration, let us be really clear on a political level what that is. People move. You think people get up one morning and say, it's a great day to emigrate and a great day to leave this country. Nobody wants to leave a place where they're familiar with people, they're familiar foods, familiar surroundings, familiar customs. To tear yourself away from that and go someplace where you have no idea what is facing you, but you're going. That's an extraordinary amount of courage. And whatever you meet, you're prepared to deal with it because you have a goal, and your goal is to succeed in your plan. And for many, that plan is to make sure that their children are adequately taken care of. They didn't ask for Holland or Spain or England or the United States to come into their country and just literally rape it. They didn't ask to be denied as citizens of those countries, to be deprived of the benefits of their investment. So immigration has a lot to do with what the country, the host country, the history of the host country in the country that you're leaving. Britain now wants to basically control its borders. Well, we say, go right ahead and you try that. To this day, Jamaica, 50 years, quote, independent, unquote, cannot sell its own sugar. England does that. To this day, Dominica, the little wonderful island whose main economy at one point rested on the production of bananas, it cannot, the United States has blocked it from selling bananas on the open market. A tiny little country. In favor of Dole and Chiquita and whoever else is growing bananas. And taking bananas from the Caribbean, from Asia, from wherever they could find it. Paying people ridiculously low prices. It's a very complicated thing. So, where are you from is a loaded question. And it requires the person asking the question to understand your own history, and you will understand where I'm from. But we should qualify that the questioner first qualify him or herself. Do you understand your history? Then you would understand my answer. Where are you from? Where are you from? On a social level, it translates into a whole different thing, but we'll get to that another day as to the opinions that people have based on their inhumane conditioning in the United States as to who is a real person. But that's another discussion. We're talking in the realm of politics. So where are you from? As I said, imagine a region that should have continued from 2100 BC to just be left alone. Let people live the way they want to live and evolve. In other words, anybody coming from that region has come from civilizations. The United States was just born the other day. There are people in this hemisphere who come from civilizations long before Christ was born, long before that. They had a culture. They had customs. They had a way to organize themselves and govern themselves. In fact, right here in the United States, the actual Constitution patterned itself after, well, not even identically, but they tried to incorporate what they had observed in the First Nations that they met here. And how they governed themselves. There was a process. And it was spectacularly superior, even to this constitution today. There were civilizations here. The notion that the arrival of the European man somehow is the beginning of civilization. Here's Columbus coming around in 1498. Thousands of years late and wreaking havoc on the notion that these cannot be civilized people. There's no civilization here until we get here. So I just wanted to introduce that idea to you that it's a loaded question. And both the immigrant, especially immigrants should do some study. Immigrants have no clue, for the most part, about what this society is all about. They're guided only by their agendas and fulfilling their agendas. But they need to study it. It's imperative, I think. This notion about immigration being a supreme gift. Yes, it is in some ways very much a gift to people who are hurting, to people who choose to sacrifice themselves so that others they love can progress in life and achieve the things they want to achieve. So yes, it's a good thing. But there definitely is a relationship between the quest for immigration and what other countries have done as imperial powers to make immigration imperative as a human right. And if, as I said before, if you look at the successive years and centuries of exploitation and the Holocaust, Dr. Jan Carew, my really good buddy and pal who passed recently, in his book, Rape of Paradise, talks about Columbus essentially decimating the society within 20 years. Within 20 years of his arrival, the entire Caribbean saw its population brought down to almost negligible numbers. So if you look at the history and the waves of exploitation, the waves of decimation, the waves of denial, the waves of the looting of everything that should normally sustain you where you are. These things should sustain you where you are because they were there. The right to grow your own food was there, but your land must produce sugar. So you will have to ration what you eat so that Britain can get the sugar out of you, or rum, or molasses, or in the case of the South, the cotton and indigo and rice. Believe it or not, the cultivation of rice in the United States is directly related to the Holocaust of Africans. They brought them here because those were the people who had the scientific knowledge of irrigation and the cultivation of rice and made the United States, in fact, one of the world's leading producers of rice. And today you have a country like Guyana in the fertile soil of the Amazon and the Orinoco, and they are importing rice. You see? To this day, the environment has been poisoned, utterly poisoned by people mining aluminum and putting all these chemicals in the water. Cancer is at an untamable rate in the Caribbean now. People just plundering, just leveling the Amazon rainforest. And little islands like Barbados, 12 miles long and a smile wide, as they say, having to devote its prime land to tourism, building hotels, poisoning the waters. The fish are scarce now in the Caribbean. So, where are you from? I could tell you where I'm from. The problem is you don't know. you don't know. You don't know where I'm from. So, the issue of immigration is now hinged on, quote, bad immigrants, unquote. These two young men who, to me, did the most unspeakably stupid, just useless thing. I have no compassion for them whatsoever. But their act, senseless act, is now going to be used to introduce the question of immigration, and even so, incorrectly. These people formulating immigration policy refuse to have any historical reference to it, refuse to understand that immigration and policy are linked. They absolutely are. We will continue this discussion on Monday. I want to just take a couple of calls before we go. I went on about this, but it struck me so hard today. I thought I would begin the process of discussing it because this is just like the gun, what they call it, the president chooses to call it reform, gun reform, and you're not dealing with the real issue. Immigration is the same thing. We will deal with a slight piece of it, a cosmetic piece of it, and because we can't, in all good, we will have so many embarrassments if we were to deal with it in a realistic way. So we'll deal with it in a superficial way that is politically appealing to the masses, and we will not get any deeper than that. So we will leave it to, well, we must secure our borders. Wow, isn't that insightful? You must secure your borders. Well, yeah, to call that reform is an insult, isn't it? Reform is securing your borders. And that's the level at which the United States is operating in terms of policy. When you talk to people who are serious, I mean, it becomes almost laughable that people are so superficial, and yet they have the power to make the laws. All right, we'll take a call. Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, yes, you're on the air.
Oh, sorry about that. I put it on mute so you wouldn't hear my background noise. But greetings to you, Eutrice, and hello. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Okay, I do appreciate you going into that detail, Eutrice, because I'm like yourself. I had a passport since I was 8. My oldest child, he had a passport since he was 2. And he has been traveling the globe by myself and my husband because we are both military people. And as a result of that, he has been pretty much all over the place, the eldest child as well as the youngest. So I quite agree with what you were saying, and it offends me as well when I hear people, because they do the same thing to me. They always ask me, well, where are you from? Because they can't place my accent. They're always trying to fit me into a group. Well, based on your accent, you're sounding as if though you're a Jamaican. I said, no, I'm not a Jamaican. I said, mm-hmm. What makes you think that I'm Jamaican? Because I could recognize all the different accents from all the different Caribbean islands. Because mm-hmm. of my travels and as well as from the different people that speaks English that comes off the continent, I could recognize them by what part of Africa they are from because they're not all sounding the same. Like yourself, my mother is a Bajan. My father is a Guyanese. I'm related, by the way, to Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. So I pretty much know the history, as you were saying, about the Caribbean. My grandfather, my mother's side, he's Cuban. So my godparents are also Chinese. So I'm like you. We have all a mixture in our family, from East Indians to Chinese, you name it, as well as Native American. My grandmother, my father's mother, she's a Native American, as they would call them, Amerindian, back in Guyana. So I know the feeling, as you said, and people, when they insult you because they think that you are just some recent immigrant, that you have no history, and as you have laid it out, my grandmother, my father's side, she can go back and date her family history for over 1,000 years, recite the lineage, and pass it down. We used to have to go, as they call it back then, go in the bush. I learned how to make kasrip, cassava bread, all of those things. I learned how to do when I was a child coming up, because we had to learn. My father was an iridologist. He could read your eyes and tell you what's wrong with you, prescribe certain bushes for you to go and get, boil it and drink it in order to clear up whatever maladies might be ailing you. So these are things. I never went to the Utrecht Zone. The only time I went to the hospital was twice when I was pregnant. That's the only time I've ever been to a hospital. I've never, ever, in all my adult life, and I've lived over half a century, never been in a hospital except for those 2 times.
I want to just get one more call in quickly, Sarah, before I didn't realize I took up all that time, but I was running my mouth off, and I just want to get one more in. So, but thank you so much for contributing today. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice.
Yes, hello.
Thank you for taking the call, and thank you for the program. It's always really good to hear from you on this particular level. I think I identify with it so much in terms of hearing about what's going on with you and how you see things and feel things and know things. I love to hear the guests, but when I hear from you, it just moves me quite a bit.
Oh, thank you.
What I wanted to say also is that I find that people are not getting the link between foreign policy. And when I say people, specifically black people, people of color, Latinos, who are here, they don't really see that what goes on in terms of education, in terms of borrowing money, is in terms of the prison system, is directly related to what happens into these other places. Because if you really look at it, as far as I've been able to see since I was in my late teens, is that everything's when they ask you to take out a loan, and then they trap you, it's basically the same kind of thing that you find at these, in terms of individuals here in this country, black people, poor. And sometimes even with more money than poor, but it's the same thing where they trap you and you can't get out of it. And then you look in the Caribbean and you find that these same countries are in Africa, and they have the same type of problem where they trap you. And I wish that people would just really begin to understand foreign policy and how Africans here in this country are directly experiencing the same thing.
But you know, I believe that people understand it. They understand it in ways that we do not appreciate. That's the difference. We do not understand how they understand it, but they in fact do. I'll give you an example, and relating to money and loans, as you said. The practice of susu. Now, susu is a way in which a group of people come together and they put money into a communal pot, and they take turns drawing the total amount in the pot. Now, that's been a standard way of operating throughout the Caribbean. Susu, or I think the Jamaicans call it box. Now, would you believe that in Brooklyn, which has a large population of Caribbean folk, the banks are now looking at ways of starting susu accounts, because they were wondering, why aren't they getting that many depositors? People are continuing with their susu.
Mm-hmm, yes.
You know, they've just, so what I'm saying is they understand it, and they have created their own system and maintained their own system, which is culturally derived. And it's working for them.
And I agree with you, but what I'm also looking at is also, I'm talking about the Americans who don't understand what is actually happening to them. And I understand what you've just said, and I agree with you, and I see that. I've never played susu, and I wish I had, or, you know. But in terms of the Americans who have been here for so long, they don't understand that the predicament that we find ourselves, even in as a nation, much less individuals, is directly related. You can see whatever they get away with here, it seems that they export it. Or whatever they got away with outside, they import it, and they box the people into servitude.
Well, yes and no. And we will get to that, actually. We'll get to that somewhere in the week coming, because we want to talk now about this immigration issue and begin to talk about it in a way that I think would be helpful for people who themselves are not immigrants, but they also don't quite appreciate the full dimension of immigration.
Love you and appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. You know, this is a learning lesson for everybody, because we have to understand throughout history, immigration, they're making it as if this is new. History is about the movement of people. That's it. People have moved all over the place. Some voluntarily, some not. some because of economic conditions in their country, some because of political conditions, and some because of just will. But movement of people is nothing new. In the most ancient of civilizations, you see movements of people. That's what people do. They move all over the place. How it became stratified and how it became a political tool for global control, that's how you need to understand it now. That's what immigration is now. As I used to say before, the money used to stay in one place and they would move people around. That's the slave trade, and move people wherever they needed them. Now they want the people to stay put because the money is moving wherever they need it. So immigration is the byproduct of the shift. The shift from moving people around or causing people to be moved, and the shift from money now making all the moves, but the people staying put after all these benefits have been just taken away from the countries in which they live, in which they were born and raised. I want to thank you, but keep this in mind, please, as we get into this a little bit more in the coming week. We need to talk about immigration on a whole different level, because I believe everybody could use an education about immigration. And we'll get to know the difference between immigration and in-migration and emigration and migration. All these about the movement of people from one place to the other. Write me at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with you, Trice Lead. I thank you so much. Have a very good weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.